The next element is that of the supply chain management and procurement. So this area, the data mining promises unprecedented. Unprecedented in simple terms means unforeseen efficiencies in inventory control and procurement to the retailers. So in any given supply chain for any organization, we know that there are two critical elements which are given here, which are nothing but controlling of the held stocks or the inventory and the purchase of different products and goods, which is called as the procurement. With cash registers equipped with barcode scanners, retailers can now automatically manage the flow of products and transmit stock replenishment orders to vendors. In fact, this we've seen in an earlier chapter. The data collected for this purpose can provide deep insights into the dynamics of the supply chain. So if there are certain items which are slow movers, they take up a lot of shelf space and are not sold quickly, such items should not ideally be ordered again or replenished in a quicker term than those selling fast. The next element of supply chain management and procurement is that of the vendor performance analysis. Performance of each vendor in this context can be analyzed on the basis of a number of factors like cost, delivery time, quality of products delivered, payment lead time, etc. In addition to this, the role of suppliers in specific product outages can be critically analyzed. So what this means is that we can understand the point of view of the vendors. Their efficiencies can be analyzed when products are not available, although they are in demand. The next element is that of inventory control. This element includes various aspects or characteristics like inventory levels, safety stock. So safety stock is, you can say, a safe level beyond which the stock should not get repleted, because if the stock gets repleted and if the material which is kept or the products which are kept on the shelves also finish, then the mall will not have that particular product. The lot size and lead time analysis. So lead time analysis basically is the time taken by the particular product to sell. Both current and historic reports on key inventory indicators like inventory levels, lot size, etc., can be generated from the data warehouse, thereby helping in both operational and strategic decisions relating to the inventory. So it's extremely important that data needs to be studied about how the inventory levels change in a retail setting. The next element is that of demand forecasting. Complex demand forecasting models can be created using a number of factors like sales figures, basic economic indicators, and environmental conditions, etc. For example, let us consider this year. This year, we still do not have rainfall in most parts of Maharashtra. So in this context, there are many food grains, or you can say many fruits or many plants that might get affected. So this is an environmental condition. If correctly implemented, a data warehouse can significantly help in improving the retailer's relations with suppliers and can complement the existing SCM application. So suppliers can be told beforehand the expectations of the goods that they are supplying, the kind of quantity required, and this can form the basis of a good rapport or a relationship with the supplier. The next application of data mining is that of the storefront operations. The information needs of the store manager are no longer restricted to the day-to-day operations. Today's consumer is much more sophisticated, and he or she demands a compelling shopping experience. So today, as we know, the shopper or the customer has become the king. They are spoiled for choices. To suffice this requirement, the store manager needs to have an in-depth understanding of the customer's tastes and purchasing behavior. Data warehousing and data mining can help the manager gain this particular insight. So, following are the uses of BI or business intelligence in storefront operations. The first being the store segmentation. This analysis takes the data that is common for different stores and finds out which stores are similar in terms of product or customer dimensions. In other words, what stores are similar based on products that are sold quickly or more slowly in comparison to the rest of the stores. Next step is to build the profile of the customers that buy from the specific store. So here you get relevant data which actually helps you customize the store experience for your customers. The next element in the storefront operations is the market basket analysis. It is used to study natural affinities between products. One of the classic examples of market basket analysis is the beer diaper affinity, which states that men who buy diapers are also likely to buy beer. So this is done through research in various stores in the US, and there is a relationship which is said to have existed. This is an example of two product affinity, but in real life, market basket analysis can get extremely complex, resulting in hitherto unknown affinities between a number of products. So what might be the psychology of a person who creates such affinities is particular or unique to people. Some people might love to buy a bottle of soda along with chips, which is a common affinity. But somebody buying a t-shirt and a bottle of wine might be quite uncommon. So the affinity or the relationship might be unique to such shoppers. The next being the out of stock analysis. This particular type of analysis probes into the various reasons resulting in an out of stock situation. So many malls face this issue, or many retail outlets face this issue of things being out of stock. Remember the day when you went to a particular outlet and found your favorite grocery missing, or probably your favorite brand of coffee or tea missing from the particular shelves. Typically, a number of variables are involved and it can get very complicated. An integral part of the analysis is calculating the lost revenue due to product stock out. So in order to remain competitive, you need to actually have data mined to make you understand why the product is stocked out and try and deduce certain strategies to prevent this from happening in the future. The next application is that of alternative sales channels. So this is further categorized under weblog analysis, which includes analysis of aspects like site navigation. So here we are talking about e-tailing or e-business analysis, referrer analysis. So if it's an online site, and if you are running a referral program, so you can also run a referrer analysis, and error analysis. So any types of exceptions or errors thrown can be analyzed, and a keyword analysis. So probably people entering keywords in Google and reaching the site. So what are the precise keywords? What keywords attract or in captivate more customers and so on are analyzed here. The next area is that of finance and fixed asset management. The role of financial reporting has undergone a paradigm shift during the last decade. Your paradigm in simpler terms means a complete principle or a complete thought change or shift. It is no longer restricted to just financial statements required by the law. Increasingly, it is being used to help in strategic decision making. So, it is not to abide by the law or any requirement basis or any mandatory basis that such statements are required, but also to create information which paves a path for future analysis. Also, many organizations have embraced a free information architecture whereby financial information is openly available for internal use. So this architecture, it actually helps the people, the management in the mall, probably they might benefit if they are at various locations. This includes budgetary analysis, which has the specific aspect of data warehousing facilities analysis of budgeted versus actual expenditure for various cost heads. Also included is the fixed asset return analysis. This is used to analyze the financial viability of the fixed assets owned or leased by the company. So, what is the current status of those particular assets? These assets can be in terms of the locations, assets can be in terms of the various infrastructural elements, and so on. The next analysis is the financial ratio analysis. So, various ratios which are involved in finance, like the debt equity, liquidity ratios, etc., can be analyzed over a period of time. The next includes profitability analysis, which includes the profitability. So, you have to analyze the profitability of various individual stores, departments within the stores, product categories, brands, and individual units, that is, those are kept on the shelves. Now, let us discuss the critical element of leveraging the potential of retail analytics. Analytics have become one of the most powerful tools available to retailers and are being used for a broad variety of purposes. In fact, we have discussed a good amount of analysis through various types of analysis in the last few slides. One major issue regarding analytics is that retailers may feel as if there are too many analytical options to explore. So, what will happen is a retailer might probably end up being a jack of all trades and master of none. So, people might get disturbed with the huge variety of tools available and might not know which to use, or might end up using generically all the tools with no specific meaning. The breadth of analytical processes and applications suggests that retailers need to selectively target investments in analytics based on their strategies and industry positions. So, you need to create a customization and use only those tools which is specific to your business requirement. So, some of the analytics used are as follows. The first being the clienteling analytics. These systems are already used by high-end retailers such as Brooks Brothers and Nordstrom to store details on preferences and purchases of particularly good customers. So, for example, if the customers are high net worth ones, probably who buy huge amounts of grocery or apparels, and you see them commonly coming to the store. So these systems or tools are for them. The next being the demand shaping analytics. It is already clear that marketing promotions and pricing have a strong effect on demand. So if you understand which products have a greater pull or demand, you can probably run these analytics to get the best out of the data and probably store more products or goods which have such huge demands. The next being the sentiment analysis. Retailers who find it helpful to know what customers are thinking about particular foods, clothing styles, or other products are actually understanding the emotions or the sentiments of the shoppers. So, analysis of the qualitative context on the internet is extremely useful in this context. So, there are applications available for e-business and even for the you can say brick and mortar stores who can capture this particular element and qualitatively collect information. The next analytics is the video analytics. Retailers already use video to prevent shoplifting and associate fraud. So we have the security systems. We all know from several years the shops have been fitted with cameras or short circuit CCTV footage, and it makes shoplifting very difficult and to understand the movement of consumers through stores. So some hotspots can be identified in any given store. For example, if people in a specific area love to purchase chocolates, so the chocolate area will be full of people. So through the CCTV you can physically get evidence of this particular pattern. This makes it possible to summarize patterns and activities in video images and to create alerts. The retail analytics historically are embedded in a set of organizational silos. Silos mean different compartments which are not integrated or do not cohesively function with each other. So that's the meaning of silos. So what this means is different areas of analytics have not cohesively worked as a unit. They have been working separately. But the only way to make a difference with analytics is to take a cross-functional, cross-product, cross-customer approach. It is also necessary to establish bold goals for what analytics can do in the retail organizations. Given the current retail environment, it may take a bit longer for retailers to transform themselves into precision analytical machines. However, the overall trends are clear. Retail is a data intensive industry and is thus taking advantage of all the data to operate and manage the business better through the required analytics. The proliferation or the combination of loyalty programs or the integration of loyalty programs in sophisticated economies suggests that saturation is approaching, if not here already. So this sophisticated economies means developed nations like the European Union nations or the United States, where if there are a multiple choice of loyalty programs, people generally get saturated out of them. The average household already belongs to more than 10 loyalty programs, but is only active in 4. To explain and simplify this, let us say you have a Big Bazaar points card. The next time you visit Shoppers Stop, you get a loyalty or a bonus card there. The next time you visit a Reliance Retail, you get a card from there, and so on and so forth. So in your wallet, you have about 7 to 8 loyalty program cards, but somehow you are more inclined to buy from Reliance Retail or from a big bazaar or a DMart, you don't normally go to Shoppers Stop. So only two or three of the loyalty program cards will be active at any time. Now let us discuss the use of behavioral segmentation for retailers. In behavioral segmentation, customers are grouped by behavioral and usage characteristics. Although these kind of segments can be created with business rules, that is, with certain logic or algorithmic or mathematic programs, this approach has inherent disadvantages. It can efficiently handle only a few segmentation fields, and its objectivity is questionable as it is based on the personal perceptions of a business expert. So let us say if 100 people the information is captured, it might not prove to be the right behavior, because this is based on the notions of some experts and does not hold true in the real world. UK based retailer Tesco has profited greatly from the introduction of its loyalty card, which is known as the Club Card. 80% of Tesco's sales can be tracked through the Club Card. The retailer provides rebates of 1% of customer purchases, historically by direct mail, but increasingly by email. So behavioral segmentation helps when it is used in the right way, like it's happening in Tesco. Another example is that of the online discount retailer Overstock.com, which uses targeted and event-driven email marketing to customize category and product offers and even pricing under different circumstances. Targeting email offers has led to a 50% revenue lift from the email channel, and average order size increased by 6%. So if you notice that if things are specifically targeted or focused on specific groups, the profitability increases because there is a good increment in the sales which are generated from such marketing efforts. In behavioral segmentation, the segments are identified with the application of appropriate clustering models on usage or behavioral data that usually reside in the organization's data warehouse or MARTs. So what this ideally means is that there are specific models which create segments or groups or clusters, and then they actually group common behavior, or they call out common behavioral patterns from individual customers. Based on this, they create the business logic, which is of course bound by algorithms, and they create a specific logic based on which the stocking of products, replenishment, the demand supply can be determined. Thus, this type of segmentation can be implemented with a high degree of confidence and relatively low cost. Attributes that can be used for this type of segmentation include product ownership and utilization, volume, type, frequency of transactions. For example, if let us say Samsung has launched a new TV, a curved TV, which is at an economical price for high-end customers. So in this context, many customers buy this new release, and of course after a couple of months, data is found that the patterns for buying are more in urban, or you can say rich areas, than the rural or semi-urban areas. Then the stocks can be diverted towards such locations. So in this particular manner, we've completed this particular chapter. Here we've seen the importance of data mining and data warehousing. To be specific, we've seen the various applications of data mining in the field of retail, what its significance or importance is. We've also seen customer segmentation. We've also seen how data mining can be leveraged in the form of retail analytics, and we've also seen the important element of behavioral segmentation. Thank you.